said, "Oh no, not owls too," was because I already had some pets. There was a summer house in our backyard, and we kept about 30 gophers in it. They belonged to Bruce and me and another boy called Murray. We caught them on the prairie using snares made of heavy twine. The way you do it is like this. You walk along until you spot a gopher sitting up beside his hole. Gophers sit straight up, reaching their noses as high as they can so they can see farther. When you begin to get close, they flick their tails, give a little jump, and whisk down their holes. As soon as they do that, you take a piece of twine that has a noose tied in one end, and you spread the noose over the hole. Then you lie down in the grass, holding the other end of the twine in your hand. You can hear the gopher all the while, whistling away to himself somewhere underground. He can hear you too, and he's wondering what you're up to. After a while, he gets so curious he can't stand it. Out pops his head, and you give a yank on the twine. You have to haul in fast, because if the twine gets loose, he'll slip his head out of the noose and zip back down his hole. We had rats, too. Murray's dad was a professor at the university, and he got us some white rats from the medical school. We kept them in our garage, which made my dad a little peeved, because he couldn't put the car in the garage for fear of rats would make nests inside the seats. Nobody ever knew how many rats we had, because they have so many babies, and they have them so fast. We gave white rats away to all the kids in Saskatoon, but we always seemed to end up with as many as we had at first. There were the rats and the gophers, and then there was a big cardboard box full of garter snakes that we kept under the back porch, because my mother wouldn't let us keep them in the house. Then there were the pigeons. I usually had about 10 of them, but they kept bringing their friends and relations for visits, so I never knew how many to expect when I went out to feed them in the mornings. There were some rabbits, too, and then there was Mutt, my dog. But he wasn't a pet, he was one of the family. Sunday morning my father said, "Billy, I think you have enough pets. I don't think you better bring home any owls. In any case, the owls might eat your rats and rabbits and gophers." He stopped talking, and a queer look came into his face. Then he said, "On second thought, maybe we need an owl around this place." So it was all right. Sunday afternoon, Bruce and I met Mr. Miller at his house. He was a big man with a bald head. He wore short pants and carried a great big haversack full of cameras and films. He was excited about the owl's nest, all right, and he was in such a hurry to get to it that Bruce and I had to almost run most of the way just to keep up with him. When we reached the edge of the owl bluff, Mr. Miller got out his biggest camera, and after he fussed with it for about half an hour, he said he was ready. "We'll walk Indian file, boys," he said, "and quiet as mice, tiptoe. Mustn't scare the owls away." Well, that sounded all right, only you can't walk very quietly in a poplar bluff, because of all the dead sticks underfoot. They crack and pop like firecrackers. Under Mr. Miller's feet, they sounded like cannon shots. Anyway, when we got to the nest tree, there was no sign of the owl. "Are you sure this is an owl's nest?" Mr. Miller asked us. "Yes, sir," Bruce answered. "We seen the owl sitting on it." Mr. Miller shuddered. "Saw the owl sitting on it, Bruce. Well, I suppose I better climb up and take a peek. But if you ask me, I think it's just an old crow's nest." He put down his big haversack and the cameras, and up he went. He was wearing a big floppy hat to keep his head from getting sunburned, and I don't think he could see out from under it very well. "Boy, has he got knobby knees," Bruce whispered to me. We both started to giggle, and we were still giggling when Mr. Miller began to shout, "Hey!" He yelled, "Scat! Hui! Hoi! Hoi!" Bruce and I ran around the other side of the tree so we could see up to the nest. Mr. Miller was hanging onto the tree with both arms, and he was kicking out with his feet. It looked as if his feet had slipped off the branch and couldn't find a place to get hold of again. Just then, there was a swooshing sound, and the old owl came diving down right on top of him, her wings spread wide. She looked as big as a house, and she didn't miss Mr. Miller by more than an inch. Then she swooped up and away again. Mr. Miller was yelling some strange things, and good and loud, too. He finally got one foot back on a branch, but he was in such a hurry to get down that he picked too small a branch. It broke, and he slid about 5 feet before his belt caught on a stub. While he was trying to get loose, the owl came back for another try. This time she was so close, We could see her big yellow eyes, and both Bruce and I ducked. She had her claws stuck way out in front of her. Just as she dived toward him, Mr. Miller, who couldn't see her coming because of his hat, gave a jump upward to get free of the stub. The result was the owl couldn't miss him even if she wanted to. There was an awful flapping and yelling, and then away went the owl with Mr. Miller's hat. I don't think she really wanted that old hat. It was all Mr. Miller's fault for jumping at the wrong time. The owl seemed to be trying to shake the hat loose from her claws, but she couldn't because her claws were hooked in it. The last we saw of her, she was flapping out over the prairie, and she still had the hat. When Mr. Miller got down out of the tree, he went right to his haversack. He took out a bottle, opened it, and started to drink. His Adam's apple was going in and out like an accordion. After a while, he put down the bottle and wiped his mouth. When he saw us staring at him, he tried to smile. Cold tea, he explained. Thirsty work, climbing trees in this hot weather. It was an owl's nest, wasn't it, sir? Asked Bruce. Mr. Miller looked at him hard for a moment, then, Yes, Bruce, he said. I guess it was. There was one thing about Mr. Miller, you couldn't stop him for long. Now he explained to us that it was probably a bad thing to climb the nest because it would disturb the owls too much. He had a better idea. He took a hatchet from out of his haversack. We set to work building something he called a blind. What this was, really, was a little tent fixed on a platform of sticks high up in another tree, but close to the owl tree. It took a couple of hours to build the blind. Bruce and I went scrounging for pieces of wood, and when we brought them back, Mr. Miller hauled them up the chosen tree with a rope and nailed them into place. When he had a platform built, he hauled up the tent. The tent had a round hole about as big as your fist in the front of it. That was the camera. According to Mr. Miller, you could hide in the blind and stay there until the owl thought everything was safe. Then, when the owl came back to her nest, you could take all the pictures you wanted and she would never even know about it. He sure must think owls are dumb, Bruce muttered to me when Mr. Miller wasn't near. She may not see him, but she could see that tent if her eyes were tight shut, and I don't think she's going to like it. When the blind was finished, Mr. Miller said he was ready to try it. You boys go off for a walk, he told us. Make a lot of noise when you're leaving. The book says birds can't count, so the owl will think all three of us have gone, and she'll never guess I've stayed up here in the blind. Okay, Mr. Miller, I said. Come on, Bruce, let's get going. We walked about a mile away to a little slough and started looking for red-winged blackbird nests. It was another nice day, and we forgot about Mr. Miller until we began to get hungry. Then we went back to the bluff. Mr. Miller was on the ground. He had just finished the rest of his cold tea, but he didn't look the least bit well. His face was awfully white, and his hands were shaking as he tried to put the camera away. The camera looked as if it had fallen out of a tree. It was scratched and covered with dirt. Get some good pictures, sir? I asked him cheerfully. No, I didn't, Mr. Miller said, and it was sort of a snarl. But I'll tell you one thing, any blame fool who says owls can't count is a liar. On the way home, Mr. Miller finally told us what had happened. About an hour after we'd went walking, the owl came back. She lit on her nest, and then she turned around and took a good long look at the little tent, which was on a level with her, only about 6 feet away. Mr. Miller was busy inside the tent, focusing his camera and getting ready to take the owl's picture, when she asked, "Hoo, hoo, 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 hoo," and took one leap. The next thing Mr. Miller knew, the front was ripped right out of the tent and the owl was looking him in the eye from about a foot away. Mr. Miller accidentally dropped his camera, and then, of course, he had to hurry down to see if it was all right, and that was when we got back to the bluff. I guess it wasn't a very good day for Mr. Miller, but it wasn't too bad for us. Mr. Miller said he'd seen three young owls in the nest, and he thought they were about halfway grown, which meant they were about the right age to take home for pets. All we had to do now was figure some way to get hold of them.